Happy Saturday, everybody. Welcome to Campbell and Knezovic. I'm Michelle Knezovic with Elijah Campbell from South Carolina. He's tuning in from today. Elijah, happy Saturday. How we doing?
I'm fantastic. How are you guys doing today?
I'm doing great. We got Nick Kaiser on the board. Nick, how we doing? Nick pulled the mute. Nick pulled the Rex Road.
I did. I'm sorry.
And by the way, no.
It is Keezer, Michelle.
Keezer. Oh, my goodness. I'm so sorry.
Oh, wow. An error in the first minute of the show. We were off to a fantastic start.
It's okay.
Listen, we're off to a fantastic start. Listen, everybody pronounces my last name wrong, so we can relate on that.
We can't all have last names that are just Campbell, so.
Yeah, Elijah is very privileged in that aspect. Well, happy Saturday morning, everybody. I hope you have your coffee, and I hope you are ready to talk some NFL, to talk a little hoops, which we're going to start with. Elijah, the Miami Heat survive in advance last night just by the skin of their teeth.
Yeah. I mean, well, they look dead like the last two games, right? Like in the one in Miami in game five, they scored 80 points the entire game. And Jimmy Butler looked like that knee injury was a lot more severe than was kind of let on. That team, like, that's a team that had 23. This is one of my favorite stats from the series so far. So in game five, the Miami Heat had 23 3-point attempts in which a defender was 4 to 6 feet away. The Miami Heat made zero in that game. 0 for 23. That's not very good. They shot 15% in that entire game. A team that was the best three-point shooting team in the NBA all season long couldn't hit the broadside of a barn for two whole games. And then last night, Jimmy Butler just drops 47 and has the game that saves their entire season. And now the momentum's completely shifted. Like, I think there's been three or four different times in this series where it's like, okay, Boston's in firm control. They're the much better team. Or like after game one, it's like, oh man, Boston gave them a really good punch and Miami came back and goes on this incredible run. And game three, you're like, oh, well, if Bam Adebayo is scoring 29 points, no one's beating this Miami Heat team. So like this, there's been so many just like twists and turns of this series that it makes predicting game seven almost a fool's errand.
Elijah, I am so excited. I think this has been my favorite series, but it's weird because you think about it, and the series are competitive, but then the games themselves, I feel like, haven't been. And to be honest, you know that Jimmy Butler heard Draymond Green after the Warriors clinched the West, and they were talking, Draymond and Steph were on with Ernie, Kenny, Shaq, and Charles, and Draymond said, "Oh, you're asking me who I want to play? How about I know we're going to play Boston?" You know, Jimmy Butler and the Heat heard that, and that got them a little fired up, you know. And, hey, for the Warriors, now they're sitting back. This series is going to seven games, and they get a little rest under their legs.
Might have been some, like, 4D chess there from Draymond Green, too. Like, if I give them some extra motivation, if I maybe give them some bulletin board material – maybe they push this thing to seven so these teams can just beat the hell out of each other. So that way when they play in game one on June 2nd, they're going to have tired legs because Jimmy Butler would be coming off like two games in which he has to score 40-plus just to keep their season alive. So maybe there was some strategy to that. Who knows?
Maybe there was. If we do a quick prediction right here, I know we usually do give and go. Who do you think is coming out of the East?
Man.
Who do you think's winning this game seven and playing the Warriors?
I still like Boston. Like, I know it's weird because if the Celtics win this game, that means they would have stolen three games in Miami to win this series. And that almost seems, if you had told me at the beginning of the series that Boston has to win three road games to win this series, I don't think that's possible. I would have said the Heat would have won in five. Like, if the Heat are playing that well in Boston, it would be really hard for me to be able to foresee them winning those games on the road. They would have won a game five and a game seven on the road, which would be bonkers. But like, the Celtics are so big, and I think the Heat rely a lot on Jimmy Butler shooting 15 to 18 foot jumpers, and that's
making
not a very efficient
her having game. 47 points in order to win the game.
Yeah, two of the three games the Heat have won in the series, Jimmy Butler's had to score north of 40 points. Now, is it sustainable? Is it doable? Like, sure. Like, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Jimmy Butler scores 45 in game seven and the Heat win by like 6 or 7 points. But they almost have to rely on that, right? Because you're not getting a ton of offensive production out of anybody else. Like Bam Adebayo outside of game three has been a no-show for a lot of this series. You know, Kyle Lowry finally showed up last night, 18 and 10 assists. They signed him to that massive deal for 10 assists, right? They didn't sign him to score like 35 points. They signed him for his championship experience and to be able to facilitate the ball. He finally did that for the first time in the series a little bit last night. Max Strus finally hit a couple shots. But I still just like Boston because I feel like it takes fewer things to go completely right for them to win. Jason Tatum doesn't have to go nuts. They're so good defensively. They have a better group of defenders, and I think they're an all-around better defensive team. So if there's any team that's equipped to win on the road in this environment, I feel like it is this Boston Celtics team. But, man, it's predicting anything in this series has been incredibly tough so far. But I think I'm still leaning Boston, personally.
Elijah, I'm pretty much on the same page as you. I traditionally have been a Miami Heat fan just because I love D. Wade. But I think if we're looking at it, I mean, Miami could very well win, right? But I think if we're looking at from a team standpoint, Boston has just really peaked at the right time. We saw Miami during the regular season was peaking. Mm-hmm. I just feel like it was the wrong time for them. And then switching over to the Stanley Cup playoffs, we've got the Canes and the Rangers today at 7 p.m. Game six tonight.
Six.
Hurricane 3, Rangers 2. So if the Rangers win, they keep it alive, and then they move into game 7. What do you like about that series so far?
What I like about it is the Hurricanes are still the same team they were in the last series. Like in a lot of like in the NHL and in NBA playoffs, you do see a lot of teams kind of adjusting a little bit as the playoffs kind of go along. Like the Boston Celtics or the Miami Heat, perhaps, you know, like they've been able to win at home and on the road. Some of the struggles they had in their first series, they didn't have in the second series against Philadelphia, or they just got better as some of these series go along. And the Carolina Hurricanes cannot win on the road. I just straight up can't do it.
Nope.
They are undefeated at home in the playoffs, and they are winless on the road in the playoffs. They are strange in that regard. And hockey's one of those sports, too, like where you do see a lot of variance in like these playoff runs just because every team usually is pretty good on the road, right? You have to be able to win games on the road to make a run in the Stanley Cup playoffs because every other team is capable of stealing one from you. Like the Preds, like the most competitive game they played in was the game 2 on the road in Denver. You know, like home ice advantage doesn't mean as much in this market in Nashville. Like we've learned that the hard way, having a team that won the President's Trophy and then lost a game 7 at home by getting the brakes beaten off of them by the Winnipeg Jets. Like it's not the do all end all, but unless you're the Carolina Hurricanes, apparently, where you can just win all your home games and then not be as competitive on the road. And honestly, like tonight's a big one for Shesterkin, not only because they have to keep their season alive, but I think if he has a big game and you get like a 95% save percentage out of him, then they could steal that. I mean, I think they really could. But the Hurricanes have to prove they can win on the road. And if they don't, if they can't prove they win on can win on the road, they can still win the series. I think they should close out the Rangers tonight. And if I'm a Hurricanes fan, I'd be very disappointed they couldn't close this thing out in New York. But because when you play Tampa Bay, you got to win some games on the road.
When you play Tampa Bay.
Champa Bay, yes. The Champa Bay Lightning, who have won their last, is it 10 or 11 straight series in the playoffs? That's a pretty remarkable feat. Like you're approaching 70s Islanders or 70s, 80s Islanders type stuff. I think they won 19 in a row, but the Hurricanes have to prove to me they can win on the road if I'm to even feel remotely confident that they can give Champa Bay a run for their money.
Champa Bay, Tampa is going to three-peat. Honestly, this team just looks.
Feels like it.
Right? I feel like it's destined. You know, I mean, Tom Brady moves to Tampa. I mean, you're going to become a championship city. So you might as well enjoy it, Tampa. Fun fact, though, I saw this on Twitter, Elijah, about the Hurricanes-Rangers series, and it was ticket prices, right? And it said, one of the best seats in the house in Carolina – the cost of that was like $470 or something around there. That would barely get you in the door for the Madison Square Garden one for the Rangers. I was like, wow, what a gap in that. I mean, it's Madison Square Garden,
gap.
So I get it. But You might as well go. Yeah. You might as well go buy a flight to Carolina and then get a seat up against the glass.
If you're a Rangers fan, yeah, why wouldn't you? You know, especially considering, you know, that Hurricanes team just can't lose at home. So why not get as much of your contingency down there into Raleigh as you can? I did not know the ticket prices, that there was that big of a discrepancy. That's pretty astonishing. You know, and of course, like, stuff's more expensive in New York anyway than it would be in North Carolina. So like, that part makes sense, but the MSG factor, but if you're a Rangers fan, it's almost more cost efficient if you, like you said, just go to Raleigh and get yourself seats by the glass and bring your own home ice advantage.
Yeah, there you go. And a weekend in, a weekend down there would probably weather-wise be a little bit nicer, a little bit more sunshine. But Elijah, we have lot to recap this week with the Tennessee Titans, a couple veterans on the field, couple rookies on the field, couple takeaways from videos that we have seen at practice. And one rookie, you know, has been in and out of practice a little bit. And if you want to weigh in on this conversation, make sure to text us at 615-737-1025, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We will give our thoughts on it on the other side of the break. You're listening to ESPN 102.5 and 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in Campbell and Knezovic. I'm Michelle Knezovic, Elijah Campbell, virtual from South Carolina today, and I am signing in from the Hillside Medical Games Studio. We got Nick on the board. If you guys want to join in on the conversation, make sure to text in at 615-737-1025. The game phone and text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. You can also watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook Live every day. Video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. Elijah, I teased this before we headed to break. Titans were on the field today. Their practices were open to the media for their OTAs. We saw some rookies out there, but honestly, the biggest storyline wasn't even about the players on the field. It was about the Titans' first-round draft pick, Treylon Burks, you know, off the field again. And it was asked to Mike Vrabel in the press conference, you know, what's kind of going on. And as we know, Mike Vrabel doesn't get into his players' injuries or essentially any of their personal whatever is going on.
Not his thing. Yeah. Yeah, it's not his forte.
Not his thing. He's like, I will let the players speak on it, but Treylon Burks hasn't had a media opportunity after whatever's going on. We don't really know, and all of this is really just speculation at this point, which is kind of what we've been doing on our shows all week and throwing out scenarios of what could be going on or taking context clues of, you know, what is going on with the Titans' first-round draft pick. And obviously, with Titans fans, they already have that little alert in the back of their head going off because of, you know, the history of these first-round draft picks with this franchise. What were just your initial reactions when this kind of all came out of practice this week, Elijah?
It's kind of funny because the Titans fan base is almost like, as much as a fan base can be traumatized by first round draft picks, like this fan base is traumatized with their first round draft picks. But honestly, like when I saw that a lot was being made of Treylon Burks' shape, I felt it was a little presumptuous just because like a lot of times I don't know how often it really is that some players are a little behind, but I've talked to Chris Sanders about this. I've talked to D-Mace about this. Like when you're preparing for a practice or you're preparing for the combine, like the scouting combine, right? You are doing these high intensity drills to run your 40 time faster. So like you're practicing running in a straight line. You're practicing doing a 3-cone drill, none of which are things that you actually do on a football field. So it's like I've equated it several times to, you know, the ACT, like when you're studying for the ACT, sometimes you study for the test harder than you do just try to like memorize knowledge, memorize facts, you know, or certain things. Like you're studying for the test. And like in football, it's a lot of times the same way. Like a wide receiver is going to oftentimes just train for those specific drills that they're going to do in the scouting combine because that's how they're judged. They want to get their draft stock up. So getting into like football shape can be a little difficult for a lot of those rookies. And It doesn't – like, really, honestly, didn't worry me that much because I was there at OTAs the second day, and Treylon Burks seemed fine, maybe underwhelming physically. I wasn't leaving that practice going, man, this guy's a freak of nature. You know, he dropped a pass at the end of practice that I thought he should have corralled. But I think D-Mace made a really good point last week that, like, if it's July and we're in training camp and he can't do more than 30 minutes outside doing a football practice – then you should be really concerned. Then the Isaiah Wilson vibes should actually start to be a little reverberated just because that was the big knock on him. I've talked to people from the Titans organization too that said, I asked, I was like, so like, what was so evident about Isaiah Wilson not working? And like from the get-go, even in minicamp, you could tell he was out of shape and completely unprepared. And I don't want to say Treylon Burks is out of shape because trust me, I'm an expert on being out of shape. That guy is not completely out of shape, you know. I would say
he's in some pretty good shape.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. So I'm not going to sit here and be a gas bag and accuse him of just being like fat and out of shape. Like, I didn't leave practice a couple Saturdays ago thinking that, but that was like the big knock on Isaiah Wilson was he started rookie camp out of shape and uninterested, and he came to training camp out of shape and uninterested after months of preparation for it, or what you're supposed to be doing is preparing for that. So I think that's when the alarm should ring. But really, as of now, the Treylon Burks thing with him having a tough time making it through that first practice doesn't really alarm me.
Elijah, I was pretty much on the same page as you when it came to this situation. I mean, he opted out of the bowl game with Arkansas. So his last game he played for them was November 26th. That was about almost exactly 6 months ago.
Hadn't played football in half a year.
So, I mean, when you think about that and you pointed out, you know, training for the combine and trying to get these numbers to make NFL franchises look at you is different than like you're training for one specific niche thing, right?
Right.
That, yes, is going to help you in football, but it's not a practice with, you know, hitting and different drills and, you know, just getting your cardiovascular back up. Right? Point blank. I mean, so I didn't think much of it. A lot of people were speculating, is it allergies? I mean, if you're not struggling with allergies right now in Nashville or Kentucky or anything, I don't know who you are because my eyes have been itching for days and I've been sneezing. It's just kind of what comes with the territory when you're living around here. And I agree with you on that front that if this is happening in training camp in July, August, the season is about to come up, yes, that's something to be worried about because then you're literally supposed to play a game in a couple weeks. And
yeah, they have preseason that month or like later that next month, you know? And that's something you have to be in some shape.
And when Treylon Burks is coming onto this roster as a first-round draft pick, that is needed to be on the field week one because of the AJ Brown trade and Robert Woods coming off an ACL, where we did see some videos on the Titans Twitter account and Instagram of him, you know, running. And then Joe Rexroad is on our morning show. Robbie and Rexroad, he was at practice. He said that, you know, Robert Woods looked pretty good. And we heard in Tannehill's press conference that, yeah, I like throwing Robert Woods. Like, he's happy with that new weapon that he's got out there. You know, between Robert Woods, Treylon Burks, and Austin Hooper, Tannehill's going to have three guys that he's never played an NFL game with before. Does it worry you a bit that that is what is happening, essentially, heading into, you know, week one and heading into this season just because of how last season ended and AJ Brown was kind of that solid guy for him?
Now, that is the one thing I'd be concerned about. Not Treylon Burks' shape or if his allergies are keeping him from completing the first practice of rookie minicamp. It's that he's going to be relied upon to be a 600-plus yard receiver. I feel like that's a fair bar, right? Because like when you lose AJ Brown, that's a lot of stuff you have to make up. It's a lot of production. That's 23% of the target share you're going to have to make up. And that's at the floor, 869 yards to make up for. And if your number one proven target is a guy who's never played on this team, is coming off a torn ACL north of 30, it's a little concerning, you know, like the two main targets that are expected to be the two main targets on this team have never caught a pass from Ryan Tannehill. And I think that's pretty concerning, especially considering like if they don't have a ton of reps, it can be nasty, right? Like Julio Jones last year, him and Ryan Tannehill never got on that same page that was supposed to take the Titans offense from elite to the best, you know, like the clear 1A offense in football, like a lot of people kind of hypothesized going into last year. And a lot of that didn't come to fruition just because Julio Jones had the hamstring thing, wasn't able to really do a ton with Ryan Tannehill until training camp. And then it showed. And then, of course, he couldn't stay healthy. And that's a whole other thing in itself. But I think those reps are valuable. To me, that's more of a concern, honestly, that his top two targets coming into this year are guys he's never thrown the ball to in live action football. That's a little concerning. When your number one returning receiver that you have target-wise is going to be Nick Westbrook-Ikhina, it's a little concerning. And the Titans' wide receiver depth is already a little concerning. That part is what, to me, I think can make this Titans' offense regress to a point where you might be staring down the barrel of an 8 or 9 win season.
And Elijah, you pointed out, you know, Nick Westbrook-Ikhina, everybody made fun of Joe because during training camp he wrote that he's going to be a solid guy for the offense, or, you know, something along those lines, or maybe that he was just going to make the team at that point. I don't exactly know, you know, the article, but Joe had written something that essentially was, you know, Tennessee likes him, right?
And yep. Then, oh yeah, they love him.
As the season went on, we know that Mike Vrabel in his press conferences doesn't call out specific players unless specifically asked about them. But Nick Westbrook-Ikhina was a guy who said, you know, he can play all positions. And he was a versatile guy, and he was point blank just on the field and available every week for this team. And he's going to be the one that Ryan Tannehill has the most chemistry with. And during the OTAs, at some points he was wide receiver one because Robert Woods is still rehabbing from that ACL injury. And Treylon Burks was on and off the field. So I pose another question to you with, you know, Tennessee hasn't gotten the money back from Julio Jones yet. Do you think that this wide receiver free agency market is even big enough? I know Will Fuller's been thrown around out there, but obviously there's concerns with him on he's never been able to be healthy for a full season in the NFL. Do you think that you could see Tennessee maybe make another move potentially once they get that Julio Jones money back at the receiver position?
It's worth trying, you know? I mean, like, I know Paul Carsey came on y'all's show early in the weekend's like, Joe, free agency's in March. Who are you going to get that's going to make the wide receiving core that much better? But then I pose you this. Like, if your number one option is what we just laid out, your number two option is a rookie who, I mean, honestly, having a 1,000-yard season expectation from Treylon Burks is unfair. Having a 900-yard season from Treylon Burks is almost unfair. He is the most polarized, according to Adam Kaplan, from the teams he talked to, the most polarizing wide receiver prospect in this draft. There's a lot of promise there. There's also a lot of concern there. It could be a bust, you know, that it's not a sure thing. You don't have that sure thing. A veteran to come in here and help you out with a sure thing, whether it's a guy who can just give you an additional 550, 600 yards. You're not asking for someone who's going to be your number one receiver. Like Emmanuel Sanders, if he isn't contemplating retirement, I know as a free agent, I know, but I think there's serious concern that he might be retiring. Cole Beasley is out there. I mean, you can get relatively good production from Cole Beasley. And I mean, shoot, even T.Y. Hilton, but like you're only going to have a few million to work with. There's other guys out there that I honestly think could help the team. Because honestly, what are you asking for with an additional receiver? You're asking for what?
20 snaps a game.
Yeah, I mean, like, give me 4 or 5 extra catches. Like, don't make Nick Westbrook-Ikhina have to be a guy who's catching 7, 8 balls a game for 75, 80 yards. You know, if there is another option out there that can at least alleviate some of that pressure that your offense already faces, like, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I think you should at least try with whatever money you have left, address that, because that's the one thing that's going to keep this team from being anything that resembles a contender in this conference.
At the beginning of last year, heading into the season, we were worried about the defense. And we thought this offense was going to be explosive. And at some points, yes, it was last year. And now tables have turned. And this season, we're worried about the receiver room. We're worried about the offensive line. And point blank, people are worried about the quarterback. And I love some good trolling, Elijah. And one of the Tennessee Titans players on Twitter is having a little trolling fest right now, just with all the media and everything. So that'll be our – we'll discuss that on the other side, Elijah, and I'm going to make you guess which player it is. You're listening to Campbell and Knezovic on 102.5 The Game, 106.3, and on The Game Nashville app. Welcome back in Campbell and Knezovic, live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio. I'm Michelle Knezovic. We've got Elijah Campbell on Zoom today, signing in from South Carolina, Elijah. Doing a little remote. We love it. Well,
the old Palmetto State.
I teased it before the break, and Elijah, I don't know if you saw this on Twitter. This was last night. Mm-mm. And
last night, then I have not seen it.
Shout out to Paul Kaharsky, because he was the one who quote tweeted it, and that's the reason I saw it on my timeline. So I am going to read you the tweet.
Okay.
And you are going to guess which player tweeted it. Are you ready for this?
Oh, this is good. All right. Yeah, give it to me.
And it will segue perfectly into our next segment. I play center, guard, and tackle. I sit on the center of the bench. I guard the water, and I tackle anyone who tries to steal it.
Oh, that's a classic football joke. That is a classic. Oh, that's an all-timer football joke.
Once I tell you who it is, you're going to be like, oh, that makes sense.
Current Titan, like on the roster right now.
Maybe somebody who everybody has no idea what position he's going to play.
Oh, Dylan Raidens.
Dylan Raidens.
Right? Yes. Yes. Oh, Dylan Raidens with a sense of humor. I like that. Okay. That's good. That's funny. Maybe not if you're a coach, maybe not what you want to see, like prodding at his lack of playing time, because there's probably valid reasons for that. But that is pretty funny, though. So shout out Dylan Ray. It's having a sense of humor about it. That's good.
Well, and the fact that he's been that player where before the draft, everybody was like, John Robinson, what position is he going to play? And they're like, he's going to play football. We just want the best five guys.
He's a football player.
Right? I mean, nobody knows which position he's going to play. Is he going to be the right tackle? Honestly, still a big question. And, I mean, segueing into just a big question mark on the offensive line as a whole. I mean, last year, at least you had Roger Saffold on your O-line, one of the best at his position in the league, and he heads up to Buffalo now. And Tannehill still was one of the most sacked quarterbacks in the league, I think just right behind Joe Burrow. Mm-hmm. And with Tannehill not coming off his best season and the O-line just kind of with a big question mark, to be honest, I would say that I'm more worried about the offensive line for this team than the wide receiver room.
It's a valid concern. And just because losing Saffold is big. So the offensive line last year to me had one really big pro and one really big con. That big pro being they were fantastic run blockers. Roger Saffold's one of the best run blockers in the league. I mean, I'll always revert back to the 2019 playoff run, that game against the Patriots, where he referred to himself in postgame as, a bouncer. He's bouncing dudes out of the club, and that's exactly the entire Patriots defensive line. He was dismissing dudes like they were late for class. Like, he was awesome in that. And that's what he does. Like, Roger Saffold is a good mover of other men, to pave way for running backs. And that's the sole reason the Buffalo Bills signed him, right? That's a team that couldn't get any run game going. And I think them not being able to run the ball at all might be the thing that kept them from being the best team in football last year.
Yeah,
but
he's going to be Josh Allen's new best friend.
Yes, exactly. And he's because all those running backs back there, the Bills are going to find out real fast if they can actually play, because you can't blame it on a bad run blocking offensive line, because Roger Saffold still got it. But with this team last year, the biggest con was pass protection. You laid it out perfectly. Like, Ryan Tannehill got the hell beaten out of him in a lot of games last year. And a lot of it's because you didn't get, obviously, you wasted the first round pick on Isaiah Wilson. Then the next year, you have Dylan Raidens, who I thought played well in the one game he actually really played in, the San Francisco game. But you need more than just one game of playing well, to make your offensive line better. That's a really big concern, because if Nate Davis reverts back to being just a guy, then this offensive line isn't going to be a great run blocking offensive line, which means the one big thing that made them really good in the past is going to be gone. And this offense that is predicated around the run is going to have a running back who's returning from a Jones fracture, who played his last playoff game with screws in his right foot.
But hey, did you see that Instagram video?
I have not seen the Instagram video. Even though that man is a freak of nature. However, even the freakiest of freaks of nature cannot run if they don't have a great offensive line to at least give them some cushion and separation. If there's going to be a reverting in Derrick Henry's career or a serious regression, it's not just going to be his injury and his foot, right? It's going to be because the offensive line just wasn't as good. And when you lose Roger Saffold, that is you're at risk of that happening. And I can kind of see that happening this year. And then if that's going to be the case, you're going to have to be able to throw the ball. And Ryan Tannehill can't do that, quite frankly, if he's on his ass. So he's going to have to be able to stay upright, and you need something out of Dylan Raiden's. If you're not getting anything out of Dylan Raiden's this year, then guarding the water bottles and being the center of the bench and tackling anyone who comes near the water cooler might be all he does in a Titans uniform.
Which is very unfortunate, and that is not what Tennessee Titans fans want him to do. That is not what Mike Vrabel and John Robinson want him to do.
Not what he was drafted to do last year at all.
Yeah, definitely not. Well, Taylor Lewan, another big part of that O-line, coming off the ACL injury last year and was really vocal at practice this week about, you know, the difference between coming into last year's season versus this year. Here's what Taylor Lewan had to say during Titans OTAs last week.
Having an offseason of actually being able to work rather than rehab, what is that going to look like for you, week one versus a year ago?
Being in shape is the number one thing. I wasn't in shape very much last year. There wasn't a lot of finishing downfield compared to how it's been in the past. That's kind of how I made my name in this league, is being a guy that finishes, and didn't have the capability of doing that last year. I wasn't in good enough shape to do that, and being out here now, it's already a world of a difference to me. I can put a helmet on. I'm not gasping for air after four or five plays. I can go through a whole period, and I'm laughing and talking trash with the boys. It's a good time. You know, football is now fun for me again. If there's any difference you guys want to know between last year and this year, I'm enjoying the hell out of myself now. Last year, like, let's not get it twisted. That was miserable. You know what I'm saying? You guys go ahead and bleep that out. You know what I'm saying? But seriously, that was miserable. It was, the first game was terrible. Till the middle of the season, yeah, at the end of the year, things started going well. But damn, it was just not fun. Every week was like, you know, you don't feel your best. You're making 100 excuses in your head. And then you get done, you got to go unpack all those things. You can't just pretend like it didn't happen. Like, I had to go and talk to a lot of people and figure that stuff out and unpack that stuff. And once we did, it was, you know, I feel a whole lot better. I feel more like myself than I ever have.
So, Elijah, that was Taylor Lewan at OTAs this week. And he just, I mean, his whole attitude just seemed completely different. I mean, he's always a player who's going to be vocal with you, who's going to be really open and honest about, you know, what's going on and things like that. I think he's a great spokesperson. He can be a little colorful with his language sometimes. You heard little bleeps in there. But
you have to FCC proof almost every clip that he's in. Yeah,
but it's okay. It makes for great radio, right, Elijah? So what was your takeaway? Mine real quick was just that he seems like, you know, mentally, physically is just in a better place heading into this season and seems ready. He was even like, yeah, I was having fun with the guys, some of the rookies, and just really enjoying camp and actually being able to not just dread. Like, we all know that when we're out of shape and you go back to the gym for the first time. And I mean, this is at a completely different level. It's like, oh, God. Yes. Stairmaster, you hit minute two and you're like, okay, I can't breathe.
you instantly regret going in the first place. But my instant reaction, I guess, with the Lewan thing, it's like, for him, like, it's a mental thing. Like, if you, like, he wasn't as good because he, like you just said, his head wasn't in it. And if you mentally are not in the headspace to want to be able to perform at a high level like that, then you're not going to be able to do it in this kind of league. You have to love what you do. Like, the guys that are coming into OTAs voluntarily in their free time to get better, do it because they love to do it. Chris Sanders would tell you too. Like, when he would go to OTAs, it's because he loved to play football. Dude loved playing football. He was there to play football. And if you're not having fun with it, you're not like thoroughly enjoying it, not only are you going to be miserable, you're not going to be very good. And he mentioned, you know, if mentally he wasn't as juiced about football, that's when he didn't succeed, because he didn't have that drive, that desire. And I think, honestly, like, for him, I'm happy for him that he's been able to zone out a lot of negativity, a lot of stuff that that goes his way. And a lot of it is because he does bring it himself because he's such a colorful character. I mean, he is the type of player that is vocal to the point where, you know, he brings on a lot of attention to himself, whether he intends to or not. That's just who Taylor Lewan is. But I'm glad for him, at least he's been able to get in a place where he can filter a lot of that out and be able to compartmentalize the goofball from the art, you know, a little bit, and be able to at least have one make the other a little better. It's all about balance.
Well, and he's going to be an instrumental part on this offensive line this year, especially with a lot of holes and a lot of just question marks on who is going to go where and how it is all going to fit together. We do have our first caller on the show, Adam in Portland. Hey, Adam, how are we doing today?
Hey, Miss Michelle, Elijah. So, listen, I think our defense is probably as deep as it's ever been. It's probably as good. I can't remember a defense that we've had in the last 20-something years that was so rounded. This is a very rounded defense. Kind of sometimes worry about the linebackers, whatever. They're just young. But I think everywhere else is pretty solid. Defense wins championship. We won 12 games in spite of our terrible offense. If we're ready to cash in the season over a 900-yard receiver or a 48-year-old guard, then it is what it is. We got younger in skill positions, man. I feel really good about the tight end position, which is like gross neglect. I've been using that word last year. It was awful. Anthony
like
Ferkser.
You're
we're
correct.
Putting it all in there on Anthony Ferkser. Yuck. So we got Austin Hooper. He's good. I feel really good about this team heading in the next season.
Adam, thank you. Have a nice holiday weekend, and thanks for the call.
Yeah. I'm glad he's enthusiastic, but like I'll tell you this, and just because it's a team I follow closely. The New Orleans Saints were the same way last year. No weapons on offense. You relied heavily on your running back. The quarterback question wasn't as bad as was a lot worse than what this is. But they had an elite defense, and the elite defense made them a 9-win team. The ceiling for that team was 9 wins. Just because they could stop everybody, they just couldn't score. You know, they weren't like they're not beating the Tampa Bay Buccaneers if they didn't shut them out in that game. I think they won that game 3-0. I mean, there were 3 total points scored in that game, or 9-0. It's 9-0. They kicked 3 field goals. It was 9-0. The Saints aren't winning that game if they don't shut out the Buccaneers, and that was the case all year. Like, the Saints weren't winning games in which they had to score 24 points or more, because that defense was so elite that they didn't have to more than 9 times. And like, I understand the enthusiasm about this defense, because defense is legit. It is a legitimate NFL defense, as good as it gets. But I don't share the same enthusiasm with the offense.
I don't share the same enthusiasm with it, but I think I am a little bit more optimistic than you are, Elijah, on this part. But, I mean, the defense, they're nasty, and they're about to have a huge year. But there was some reports in the national media of where they kind of see the Tennessee Titans, you know, where they fall in all of these preseason predictions. On the other side, we are going to tell you where they place them, where we would place them, and if we think they're getting slept on a little bit as far as their defense. You listen to Campbell and Knezvik on 102.5 The Game, 106.3 and The Game Nashville app. Welcome back in Campbell and Knezvik. I'm Michelle Knezvik from the Hillside Medical Games Studio with Nick on the board, pumping some tunes out. Elijah Campbell is virtual from South Carolina today. Still talking Titans. If you want to join in on the conversation, feel free to text or call 615-737-1025, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, or watch our stream, Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, or the Game Nashville app. The app's always very convenient. I put my little AirPods in, go for a nice mom walk during this nice Saturday. I'm not a mom, but I'm just saying. Oh, Elijah, first mute of the day.
No.
I hope you just muted again. There we
go. All right, am I unmuted? Did I un-Joe Rexroad myself?
Yeah, it only took you 4 times.
Oh, man. So I looked down, I saw where it was unmuted, but then I clicked it again. I think Nick might have also pressed. I think we were thinking the same thing.
I have no idea. I think you were all the way up, but I think you just confused yourself for half a second.
That's okay.
I brought you back.
If it makes you feel better.
I scared myself.
If it makes you feel better, Joe, on Friday, this is just classic Friday, they're on an interview, and his mic was on, and then he thought that he muted it, and he like coughed really loud into the camera, into the microphone. And then when he went to ask a question to Nicolas Petitfrère, which we are going to hear that interview coming up in our second hour.
It was a very good interview.
So you'll actually hear this situation. Then he muted and then was trying to ask a question, and it was just gold. It was radio gold.
Oh, that is incredible. And it's also the most Joe thing. I love that man to death because of the unintentional hijinks. I think he might be the most unintentionally funniest person at the station.
Oh, he's just classic, his dad jokes, just everything about it. Joe Rexroad.
Yeah.
Can hear him 6 a.m., 10 a.m., Monday through Friday, and me,
nice
and
plug.
Robbie. Nice plug. But Elijah, I teased it before the break. Of course, it's what better season is it than preseason
lists.
Predictions before training camp, when we've just basically are basing it off of last season, how the team ended out their season, and what they did in the draft and as well as offseason moves. But obviously, there's still time, and training camp hasn't even started. We are far, far ahead. But I'm going to have you guess, who do you think is number one
in the entire NFL? I'll say the Rams. I think most people will keep the consensus, the defending Super Bowl champion, the Rams, if I had to guess.
Yep, the Rams are, I mean, this is these are the preseason polls by CBS Sports. Rams are coming in at one. I mean, basically they have pretty much everybody returning as far as really important roles and everything like that. OBJ, though, is a wide receiver. I know he is also coming off another ACL injury, but he's another guy out there that is probably still going to be looking for a home. I know it probably scares Tennessee fans or really any franchise just because he came off an ACL injury and then tore his ACL again in the Super Bowl, which is, you know, just
a little concerning.
Yeah, very concerning. But, I mean, as far as cost-wise, the Rams paid him in Bitcoin. And I know that sounds really weird, but that is...
Can't figure that one out.
I mean, hey, you don't even got to worry about the cap. I mean, I guess you do. But as far as Bitcoin, John Robinson, you got any Bitcoins? You got any Bitcoins to give him?
Yeah. Well, how much does Bitcoin cost against a salary cap in the NFL? I have no – that is so above my head. But if anyone has an answer to that, I would love to know.
Well,
but
if
he's paid in Bitcoin, maybe you can get him on a discount.
The irony of it was he lost money during his season there because Bitcoin – I don't really understand any of that, but – I just thought it was – I was like, oh, that's –
I know the value's gone down a little bit, maybe a lot of bit. But – and if that's the case, then he would have parlayed one of his best, most impactful seasons as a football player and got nothing from it.
Well, hey, he got a Super Bowl, so
– A Super Bowl, yeah. He's got a nice little ring he can pawn off if he needs money. So.
Yeah, right. I'm pretty sure he's probably doing good money-wise. But coming in at number two, no surprise, Bills. Then it goes Bills, Chiefs, Packers, no surprise there, Bucks, Bengals, Chargers. I'm really excited to see the Chargers this year, and I think they're kind of just forgotten about a little bit just because they weren't in the postseason last year. But I think that, you know, first off, they got Khalil Mack, and then also Justin Herbert, I think, is going to be one of those quarterbacks. I mean, his season last year, his numbers were, I mean, historic for a rookie.
Not a bad MVP candidate, you know, for a guy like – him and Joe Burrow are the same draft class, and Joe Burrow wouldn't have been considered better if it wasn't for that playoff run. I if you just looked at those two guys in the regular season, I think most people would have picked Justin Herbert. You know, like he's a stud. I think he's going to like this is going to be one of those years where you really consider him as a top five quarterback in the National Football League. Chargers will be no joke.
No,
they stacked up.
I completely agree. I think this is going to be that year where he really emerges. And like you said, if they were just to look at stat lines between him and Joe Burrow, you'd be like, oh, Justin Herbert had a way bigger season. But obviously Joe Burrow then goes on to take his team to the Super Bowl. Broncos number eight. Oops. Obviously they got Russell Wilson in the offseason, which was huge. 49ers, obviously, though, quarterback still kind of a – we haven't heard much about the whole Jimmy G, Trey Lance situation going on.
Weird dynamic there. I don't even know if they know what they want to do with it.
Hey, because
it depends on what they feel about Lance. If he's actually the future. If he is, I think you play him this year. But if not, then you're gonna repeat last season, I guess.
Well, maybe you do a two quarterback team. You could do a couple schemes of both of them. There you go. Then we got Rams, Eagles, Cowboys, Commanders, Colts, Browns, and coming in at 16, Tennessee Titans.
At 16, so half way through the league. Right, 16.
So CBS Sports, their little blurb on them was, it's all about Ryan Tannehill handling himself in the key moments in big games. That's why the pressure is on him and certainly why they drafted Malik Willis. Which I would disagree a little bit on the Malik Willis part, only because, I mean, Tennessee knew that Tannehill was going to be their starting quarterback. I think Malik Willis, I mean, all of us, I think, were surprised as to how far he dropped in the draft. And I think as far as where Tennessee stood, it was, I mean, he could be a franchise quarterback someday, and he's dropped far enough in the draft where, yeah, we've gotten the other guys that we need ahead of him. He's the best person on our board right now. We got to get him. I don't necessarily think they drafted him to kind of light a fire under Tannehill's, but what are your thoughts on that, Elijah?
I just think it's more of a it was a low risk thing. He fell to the point where it's not a huge bust. You're not wasting first round capital on it. Low risk, potentially a very high reward. So, I mean, I think that's why they drafted Willis. But honestly, 16th, I think sounds fair for the Titans. I've laid out my concerns in the offense, and if you can't put up points in this league to contend with all the other teams you're going to be playing, then yeah, it's going to be really hard to win in this league. The Titans have a tough schedule. A couple weeks ago, we mentioned the schedule of the Titans and all the quarterbacks they face. It is a murderer's row of just the quarterbacks that they're going to have to play this year. And a lot of the teams they played in the cross-divisional matchups got better. Cowboys are still pretty damn good. Eagles got a lot better. Don't know what the Commanders and Giants are, but
nobody does.
Nobody does, exactly. And those are still games the Titans have found ways to lose in the past. So honestly, 16th sounds about right, because 16th means you're about a 9-win team, 10-11 wins. 11 wins is a ceiling. That sounds about right to me. I don't have much pushback on that list.
Elijah, I don't either. I think, you know, as far as I think defense, I think they're top three probably in the entire NFL, top five maybe to some people in the entire NFL, but the offense, mm-hmm. still a big question mark, which obviously is going to push them down the list. And then obviously there's kind of a question mark as to just not having an elite quarterback, not having a Tom Brady, not having an Aaron Rodgers, and now a Justin Herbert or Joe Burrow. But in the second hour, we are going to talk about, you know, where do the Titans fit into the AFC South? What are the Colts looking at this year? We're going to hear from Stephen Holder of The Athletic. He covers the Colts beat. We're also going to hear from Nicholas Petit-Frere, who is a rookie on the Titans this year on the offensive end. You're listening to Campbell and Knezvik on 102.5 The Game, 106.3, and The Game Nashville app.